afternoon, and welcome to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, filling in for Melody, who has the day off. Now, that's not to say I'm filling Melody's shoes, mind you, for only Melody can, in her own unique and expert way, make those shoes walk and talk for your education and overall benefit. Just like she's provided countless individual investors and their families with financial security over the past quarter of a century. But Melody's fine and wishes all of our listeners well. So for the next hour, I'll do my best in Melody's absence to bring you my opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Today is Friday, August 14, 2020, TGIF. Hello, Todd, and thanks to producing and engineering today's program and our programs every day of the week. Let's get started with the market report. And quite a doozy today. Gold, is down about $9, half a percent. At 1944 and change. That's in the New York spot aftermarket right now. That's largely as a result of the latest U.S. retail sales report that showed the third straight monthly increase. Although July's rise was a more anemic 1.2% as compared to June's revised increase of 8.4%. In a separate report, showing that worker productivity increased at the fastest rate in over a decade last month, added more pressure on all of the precious metals today. Now, October, I believe, gold futures corrected also down about $18, 0.9%, but still showing resilience and good promise at 1952 and change. Silver, that, let's bear with me one momento. That's down at $1.12, a little over 4%. Like gold, down from its high of the day. Gold was actually as high as 1957. Silver was up there at 27.19, but finishes down $1.12. Platinum down $13 or 1.4% at $945 an ounce, and palladium is down $31 at 1.5% at $2,166. So, begs the question, what happened this week, particularly Tuesday's big correction? Well, gold and silver may just have run up a little too fast too soon. That's at least according to one precious metals expert. In an interview the other day, the day after the big correction, Peter Hugg of Kitco noted that gold and silver prices were a bit overextended after both metals had phenomenal runs. In the previous 9 weeks or so, gold hit a record high all time, and silver reached a multi-year high. On Tuesday, though, both metals fell sharply. Gold, in fact, suffered its deepest drop in 7 years. Silver ran up to $30. Gold ran up to almost $2,100. All a little too quickly, in Hugg's opinion. He said that's when the profit-taking set in. And it was just a very small door with everybody trying to get out. And as the market moved lower on Tuesday, investors who were in at higher prices were, again, like they did a couple of months ago, getting margin calls in the afternoon, which just accelerated that day's correction. Hugg said the move resulted in the precious metals market cleaning itself out. He added that he'd like to see some consolidation between now and the end of the week. That was Wednesday at these levels. And then he said, I think the uptrend will continue. Well, look, the good news is, ladies and gentlemen, over the past 30 days, gold is still up around $150 or 8.5%. Silver's up about $8, or almost 43%. More on gold's future prospects in a few minutes. Now, in the oil markets, domestic West Texas crude futures were down, looks like 7 cents to $42.17 a barrel. International Brent crude futures fell 9 cents to $44.87. In the paper markets, global stock markets were, we'll say, up, down, and all around today. They were all down in Europe, while in Asia they were up in Japan, China, and Taiwan, and down most everywhere else. And they were mostly up in South America. Now, in the U.S. Markets, another sort of up and down day. The Dow Jones closed up $34 and change at 27,931. The S&P 500 closed down 0.58 at 3370, almost 73. The Nasdaq down $23 and change, excuse me, 23 and change to 11,019. VIX volatility index 2188. That was down about 0.25. Now the U.S. dollar can return to its downward slide. That was down. Where are we? Well, those are futures. Bear with me 1 second, please. Dollar index closed down 0.22 at 93.11, so it's still holding above 93, but back on a downward trend. And in the Treasury market, the bellwether 10-year yield, that was down just barely, and that was essentially flat at 0.711%. The 2-year was down slightly to 0.149%, and the 3-month Treasury bill was unchanged at 0.099. So the real rates in I think all of those cases would cast real yields in negative territory. Interesting times, ladies and gentlemen. And that's today's DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. For all your gold and silver needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Now, with the nation's headline unemployment rate still above 10%, more than a million people, or about a million people, still losing their jobs every week, and the great pandemic still claiming 1,000 lives a day here, Washington lawmakers have left town. Republicans like Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin have claimed that the added $600 a week in unemployment benefits, which expired at the end of last month, was doing more harm than good. Hey, good for him. Easy for him to say, right? He took a $46 million severance payment to leave the private sectors a few years to come work for the president. So, hey, we're falling right in step with you, Steve. Keep coming with that empathetic news. In any event, Moody's Analytics chief economist Mark Zandi warns there's no more effective way to support an economy in a downturn than providing help to the hard-pressed unemployed, who spend any money they receive as quickly as they receive it. Before it lapsed at the end of last month, at least 25 million people were receiving the extra $600 on top of their state benefits, which normally pay a little more than $300 on average, $300 a week. The University of Chicago analysis said in July that if Congress did nothing, unemployed people would cut their spending by a third. And since unemployment benefits represented about 15% of total wages, dropping the federal supplement obviously could cause substantial declines in aggregate demand and potentially negative effects on the macro economy, according to the analysis. But Republicans have been complaining that for many workers, the combined state-federal benefit amounted to more than their previous wage. So with the federal portion now gone, employers are able to keep wages lower and essentially force people back to work. Further complicating matters, the president has signed a memorandum ordering the Labor Department and FEMA to try to replace the lapse benefit with a weekly $300 lost wage assistance payment. The problem is, it's just not clear how soon this initiative will actually pay anyone. So far, 45 states have either declined to participate or are waiting for more guidance, according to Congressman Don Beyer of Virginia. By declining to participate, that's to match the federal government's $300 extra enhanced benefit down from six, with the states providing the $100 for a total of $400. And of course, there's been little progress in talks between House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Chuck Schumer and the administration, with the two sides unable to agree even on an overall dollar figure. Initially, the Dems were at $3.5 trillion, the Republicans at $1 trillion. The Dems say they were willing to come down about a trillion dollars, so who knows what happens. But the plot certainly continues to thicken and comes as the start of the government's new fiscal year is just around the corner on October 1st, with, I might add, no funding, leading to some wondering if another government shutdown is in the offing. Consumer sentiment remained weak earlier this month as Americans expect a bumpy ride ahead for an economy coping with, well, what's really an unfettered pandemic at this point, with widespread joblessness. The University of Michigan's preliminary sentiment for early August shows an increase of 0.3 of a point to 72.8, near April's pandemic low of 71.8, that was the worst since 2011, according to the report that was released this morning. The median estimate from economists was for a decrease to 72. Now, the gauge of current conditions fell 0.3 of a percent to 82.5, while a measure of expectations actually ticked up 0.6 of a point to 66.5. A measure of the five-year economic outlook fell to the lowest since 2014, and a sign that consumers expect the pandemic will weigh on jobs and incomes for some time, despite an initial comeback. And certainly a stalemate in Washington over additional aid is also coloring consumer views, with confidence in economic policies at the lowest since President Trump entered office in January 2017. Director of the survey, Richard Curtin, said the policy gridlock has acted to increase uncertainty and heighten the need for precautionary funds to offset lapses in economic relief programs and to hedge against fears about the persistence and spread of the virus as the school year gets underway. Now, data released earlier today showed that gains in consumer spending slowed in July. More on that in a minute. And jobless claims figures released yesterday indicated improvement in the labor market, though applications for benefits still remain well above pre-crisis levels. The Michigan report also showed a gap in inflation expectations, primarily between high-income Americans and those with lower incomes, who obviously are being pinched more by especially rising food prices. People in the bottom third of incomes expect prices to rise about 3.5% in the year ahead, compared with 2.5% for those in the top third. Democrats and Republicans also continue to be sharply divided on sentiment, and the gauge rose in August among independents and Republicans, while it was almost unchanged for the D's. The survey covers responses through this past Monday, August 12th. The final report for the month will be issued on August 28th, and we'll be right here to report and talk about it with you. As I said, consumer spending, less than expected in July. Consumers spent less last month as a pullback in auto sales helped cool an economy that's been struggling to shake off the effects of the pandemic. Retail sales, surprisingly, again, rose 1.2% for the month, but against an expected increase of 2.3%. The news wasn't all a letdown, however. Excluding autos, the gain was 1.9% ahead of the 1.2% estimate. But auto purchases is a big thing, so I don't see how you can exclude that from the analysis. I think that's just a way of letting some of the pundits announce good news, particularly the politicians. Now, considered a bellwether, a separate report also showed that worker productivity rose at its fastest pace in 11 years, as I mentioned at the top of the program, up 7.3% annualized in the second quarter and well ahead of the 1.5% estimate. Overall, it's the third straight monthly increase in that category. Considered a bellwether for an economy that gets two-thirds of its activity from consumers, retail sales saw an 8.4% surge in June that included huge gains in furniture and appliance sales. However, those gains cooled last month as a resurgence in virus cases caused reopening activities to slow in several parts of the country. And electronics and appliance sales saw monthly sales jump 23%. Clothing was up about 6%, and the battered bar and restaurant industry was still up 5%. All in all, it sparked the third straight monthly gain for retail, which plunged 14.7% in April and then rebounded to 18.3% the next month as the sharp shutdown in March to stop the virus thawed. You hear the music. That means you're going to hear a couple of important messages. We hope you'll stick around and come back when we do on Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody, who, again, says she's fine and looks forward to being back on the program soon. Now, in another sign of, well, I guess you could say a number of things, a sign that fantasy lives strong in the public sector. Some might say a sign that he's not fit to hold his public position. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow, Melody's BFF, we like to tease her, yesterday said he expects the unemployment rate to return to single-digit levels as early as this month. And growth, well, better hurry up on that one. And growth in the third quarter should be 20% or more as the economy recovers from the recession. Yes, you heard that right, ladies and gentlemen. Single-digit unemployment and 20% GDP growth. Kudlow said, the key point that I would make is the economy is rebounding. It looks like a V-shaped recovery, and the recent news now is even better than it was a month ago. Kudlow made those comments in a virtual appearance at a conference hosted by the Council of the Americas. In my humble opinion, it might as well have been broadcast on the Comedy Channel. Larry's pie-in-the-sky outlook contrasts with remarks from numerous fellow mainstream economists, including Fed officials, who said as recently as this week that the rebound is slowing after a resurgence of COVID and that the U.S. economy can't fully recover until the virus is under control. Now, whether or not one thing is clear. Unemployment in single digits by the end of August? Oh my gosh, it just, like I said, good luck with that. And growth of 20% or more in an economy that, you know, we're seeing a resurgence of cases and numerous governors now rethinking the extent of their reopenings, it's going to be a challenge. Kudlow cited last week's drop in unemployment claims as a sign that the labor market is now recovering. Larry, I respectfully recommend that we wait at least another month or two to make those kinds of what now seem to be far-fetched and overly optimistic statements. Now, I asked if the economy needs another round of stimulus. Kudlow said recent actions taken by the president should provide some relief. Kudlow said bipartisan efforts to provide help for small businesses and more direct payments to households could help, in addition to enhanced unemployment benefits, albeit at a lower level than the $600 that expired at the end of July. But he noted that negotiations with Democrats were literally at a standstill. Separately, Kudlow said Trump's efforts to give workers a break on payroll taxes will apply to self-employed individuals, but gave no further details. He also said a technical change would have to be issued to the president's memorandum released on Saturday, calling for payroll taxes to be deferred in order to include people who work for themselves. So, Larry, have a good weekend, buddy. Billionaire bond investor Jeffrey Gundlach believes that gold will go higher in the long term. Gundlach, the CEO of the $135 billion Double Line Capital, said earlier in the week, suddenly everyone wants to talk about gold. Well, where you been, Jeff? Previously, Gundlach had talked favorably about the long prospects of gold, saying in early June that he's unequivocally bullish on it in the longer term. Now, as we know, gold rallied to a new all-time high of 2075 last week, but has since corrected as investors have taken profits. Kundlach also noted it had previously gone to a new high in just about every other currency, as the dollar held up pretty well until recent months, when the index, the dollar index, it has dropped about 10%, and that pushed gold to new highs. Kundlach believes that most markets right now are at a reversal stage. He said, thus, I wasn't surprised to see gold drop $100 plus on Tuesday. But he added, I'm not interested in long-term treasury bonds at all. I'm not interested in short-term treasury bonds really either. I'm interested in gold. He referenced the U.S. budget deficit, calling out the explosive growth in the deficit and debt this summer, because largely because of federal pandemic aid. He said, if we're going to continue at that type of a pace, we'll be looking at over 50% of GDP in terms of the budget deficit, which is getting almost surreal in terms of what's happening. So he says gold will ultimately go much higher because he thinks the dollar is going to go much lower. He said, I think the dollar goes lower in the long term for sure, and noted that gold could retest its recent highs in the near term. So, put that in your hat, ladies and gentlemen, when you're thinking about where to put some of your cash right now. Now, our latest blog, which is out as we speak, What a Rush of Gold and Silver, is about purchasing power and how it differs depending on where you live. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and our American Survival newsletter at dgscoins.com, or you can always read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins. This week, a new interactive map put out by the Tax Foundation compares how much $100 can buy in different regions and metropolitan areas across the country. And those differences can have a significant effect on the relative impact of different economic and tax policies at the federal, state, and local levels. Not surprisingly, there are large differences in price level by region. For example, $100 tends to buy the least in large cities in the Northeast, California, and the Pacific Northwest. On the other hand, $100 goes the farthest in rural areas in the Southeast and Midwest. In fact, California is home to 7 of the 10 most expensive metro areas in the good old USA. San Francisco Bay Area is the most expensive metropolitan region in the country, where $100 would buy goods and services that would cost just $75.99 in a metro area at the national average price level. Put another way, residents of the San Francisco Bay Area have, at least in terms of purchasing power, about a 25% lower standard of living than their nominal incomes alone might suggest. Metro areas have higher population densities than non-metropolitan and rural areas tend to drive up real property prices, real estate prices, as residents seek to occupy a limited amount of diminishing land. And that's a large driver of the higher prices that residents now face in metropolitan areas. In fact, residents of metro areas also tend to have higher average incomes, making it important to compare their incomes in real terms. Now, the 10 most expensive metropolitan areas where purchasing power is the weakest are these: San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward, California at $75.99. San Jose, Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, California at $77.28. Santa Cruz, Watsonville, California at $79.68. Urban Honolulu, Hawaii at $80.52. New York, Newark, and Jersey City, and the New York, New Jersey, PA area, $80.58. Santa Rosa, California, $81.63. Napa, California, at $81.97. Vallejo and Fairfield, California, $83.68. Washington, Arlington, Alexandria, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, 84.89. And number 10, Los Angeles, Long Beach, Anaheim, California, at 85.40. Now, the 10 least expensive areas, relatively speaking, where the dollar purchasing power stretches the most. Number 1, which is to say the least expensive area of the country, Beckley, West Virginia, where relative to $100, their value is $130.55. Danville, Illinois, $127. Jackson, Tennessee, $123. Pine Bluff, Arkansas, a little less than $123. Jefferson City, Missouri, $122. Morristown, Tennessee, $121.95. Florence and Muscle Shoals, Alabama, $121. Also Gadsden, Alabama, same, $121. McAllen, Edinburgh, and Mission, Texas, $120. And number 10, Rome, Georgia, $120.77. Now, the Tax Foundation purchasing power map can be found on our Facebook page at DGS Coins. Again, be on the lookout in your email boxes today for today's blog. Let's turn to small business. The story of American businesses in the pandemic is a tale of two markets, as we've talked about many times. Now, in a categorical sense, one is made up of tech firms and online retailers as winners that are awash in capital, and another of brick-and-mortar mom-and-pop shops that's literally collapsing. The pandemic has created an environment where losing industries like traditional retail and hospitality, as well as a sizable portion of firms owned by women and people of color, are wiped out and may be gone forever. This dichotomy of winners and losers could shape the face of American business for literally decades to come. Banks are tightening lending standards and weeding out some of the neediest borrowers. We'll talk a little bit more detail about that in a minute. The Fed's latest survey of senior loan officers finds that banks have raised interest rates and collateral requirements as well as loan covenants and are charging higher premiums for what they see as riskier loans. Lenders are applying a new filter to determine which companies are risky, making decisions based largely on firms' performance from January through June. That's a scary thought for many of them. Alan Cohen, who's CEO of Liberty SBF, a commercial real estate lender, said, "If you're a prime borrower whose business has done well, survived, and thrived during COVID, your access to capital is significantly better than businesses that have had any disruption whatsoever." He added that for businesses like hospitality, healthcare, restaurants, which have been the hardest hit of any, access to capital is just extremely difficult, if not impossible. Government agencies are supposed to act as a counterbalance, but instead have made the problem worse. For example, the Payroll Protection Program disproportionately benefited large and well-heeled companies based on the data, while missing the industries and areas that were most heavily impacted by the pandemic. And the Fed's Main Street Lending Program has been a colossal failure thus far, and some economists even call it an unmitigated disaster. That's because banks aren't inclined to lend even the Fed's money to distressed companies, and because the regulations governing the program are too strict. Big companies have borrowed a record $1.9 trillion in corporate debt year-to-date, including leveraged loans and investment-grade and junk bonds, thanks to the Fed's unprecedented asset purchases. but more than 80,000 small businesses permanently closed between March 1st and July 25th. That includes about 60,000 local businesses or firms with fewer than five locations. In the first 7 months of the year, Chapter 11 filings rose 30% from a year before, and 800 small businesses filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy from mid-February through the end of July. Times are tough out there, ladies and gentlemen. The unemployment rate is very high. Millions report that their households didn't get enough to eat or that they're behind in paying rent. That's according to the Nonpartisan Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which has created a new tracker that lets them and others track the extent of those hardships. The data, the CBPP says, drive home the need for substantial continued relief measures from Washington. The center study suggests that the extent and severity of continued hardships like hunger, eviction, homelessness will depend on whether such relief is robust and actually reaches those in need, unlike the PPP program, for example, as well as the future trajectory of the pandemic and the pace of the economic recovery. Now, the emerging data based on the U.S. Census Bureau's Pulse survey showed this as of July 21st. High rates of hardship. Tens of millions of people literally are out of work and struggling to afford adequate food and pay the rent. That's likely to get a little bit tougher in the upcoming months. The impacts on children are especially large. Next, difficulty getting enough food. 29 million adults, 12.1% of all adults in the country, reported that their households sometimes or often didn't have enough to eat in the last 7 days. Inability to pay rent or mortgage, about 15 million adults who live in rental housing, that's one in five renters, were behind on their rent at least 30 days. Unemployment is high. Again, the headline employment rate, at least reported by the government, 10.2%. That's higher than at any point during the Great Recession. And again, millions of children facing hardship, approximately 19 million children, or one in four, live in a household that isn't getting enough to eat, is behind on rent or mortgage payments, or both. In short, hardship is trending upward. That music means it's time for another short break. Please stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Okay, one more time before we roll into the weekend. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm your guest host, Dave Allen, sitting in for our good friend Melody Cederstrom. A couple of new shorts here to start off this third segment. If you're looking to refinance your home during the pandemic, it's soon going to cost you more. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have announced a new fee of 0.5% to supposedly protect themselves from losses on refinanced mortgages, given these ongoing low interest rates. The change, which starts September 1st, just a few short weeks away, adds 0.5% of the loan amount to the consumer's cost. Given record low interest rates, mortgage refinancings have been surging since the start of the crisis, brought on in part by the pandemic. Now, one analyst, Greg Bride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com, said this: "The irony is striking. The Fed is effectively printing money to buy government-guaranteed mortgage-backed securities in order to keep markets functioning, drive down mortgage rates, facilitate refinancing, and put monthly savings into consumers' pockets. And now the Federal Housing Finance Authority wants to grab that savings from the consumer and put it into Fannie and Freddie's pockets." Interesting stuff. On average, the new fee would cost lenders $1,456 on an average loan of $291,000. That's the median home price in the second quarter. The number of empty apartments for rent in Manhattan has soared to their highest level in recent history, topping 13,000, as residents have fled the city as a result of the pandemic, and landlords now struggle to find tenants. The number of apartments for rent more than doubled over the last year and set a record for the 14 years since this kind of data started being collected. By the way, the average rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, $4,620. I can tell you, one of the sons of one of my closest friends who just rented an apartment on the east side of Central Park, another $1,000 on top of that. Now, that's with two other housemates, but still, $1,800 a month per person. Now, as I mentioned in the last segment, U.S. banks reduced lending in the second quarter, even after accounting for the payroll protection program. And this comes from a new analysis from S&P Global. Even when including more than $500 billion in PPP loans that used government funds, lending increased by just 0.3% from the first quarter. Only one of the top 10 banks by total assets, as of June 30th anyway, TD Bank, had non-PPP loan growth on a quarter-over-quarter basis. Banks aren't only cutting back on commercial and business lending, they slashed their credit card exposure by almost 7.5% in the second quarter. Credit card loans totaled $808 billion across the industry as of June 30th. That was the lowest level since September of 2017. Now, among too big to fail and other major U.S. banks, lending by Wells Fargo was down 46%, American Express down 12%, HSBC down 11%, Goldman Sachs 10%, BMO Harris 9, Capital One 9, Ally Bank 8%, PNC 7.5%, Bank of America 7%, JP Morgan Chase 6%, Citibank 6%, US Bank 3.6%. Total aggregate lending among all US banks was down 4.1% in the second quarter. Oh, for many of us, particularly those with credit scores below 750 or 760, it's been a difficult time if you have no cash on hand. Now, while the mainstream media focuses on the upcoming November elections, certainly the pandemic and the ongoing protests across the country in many of our major cities, another great tragedy is unfolding all across the middle of the country in particular. A nightmarish drought, horrific flooding along the Mississippi River, and a giant derecho that just hit the farm belt have combined to make this one of the toughest years ever for farmers. It's coming at a particularly bad time because the stress that the pandemic has put on food distribution supply chains has already created periodic shortages of certain items in stores around the nation. We definitely could have used an uneventful growing season this year, and so far we're not getting it. On Monday, what's been called an absolutely massive derecho roared through the Midwest. The storm had winds of up to 112 miles per hour near Cedar Rapids, Iowa. They were as powerful as an inland hurricane, as it tore from eastern Nebraska across Iowa and parts of Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois, including Chicago and its suburbs. Most hurricanes don't have winds that high once they reach the shore, the mainland. This very unusual storm caused immense devastation. According to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, approximately 10 million acres of crops were destroyed in her state alone, flattening at least one-third of Iowa's crops. That's huge. In addition, tens of millions of bushels of grain that were stored at co-ops and on farms were damaged or destroyed as storage bins blew away. Sadly, this one storm is going to completely financially ruin some farmers, according to observers. For example, Iowa farmer Tim Bardoli is facing losses that could potentially exceed $1 million. Corn that used to stand upright on his farm is now laying on its side. Some stalks snapped off, others ripped out of the ground at the roots. Bardoli estimated he'll be out $200 an acre, or $500,000 total, although a worst-case scenario could be $500 an acre, which would equate to $1.25 million. Not a happy time. Ruby Tuesday, the long-struggling fast-casual dining chain, has been quietly closing a number of its restaurants since the start of the year. Since January, 169 of its eateries have permanently shuttered. That leaves the company with approximately 300 restaurants that are still operational worldwide. In a release earlier this year, the company noted that it owned, operated, and franchised 486 locations around the world. According to multiple reports, the chain has been struggling for years and is at risk of completely folding amid the pandemic. Bad, sad situation. All told, industry experts say that more than 2.2 million restaurants around the globe could permanently close because of the outcomes of the pandemic. Ladies and gentlemen, the retail apocalypse continues. In fact, anyone who doesn't think we're in the midst of a growing depression, that was a Freudian slip, I'm afraid we're just kidding ourselves. Here's some really big news. Perhaps I should have talked about it earlier. Israel talked of history. Palestinians cried betrayal. That after yesterday's surprise announcement of a deal to normalize relations between the Jewish state and the United Arab Emirates. In a nationwide televised address, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the deal would lead to full and formal peace with the UAE, with that Gulf Arab state, and voiced hope that other countries in the region would now follow the UAE's example. Netanyahu also said it entailed acceding to a request from our own President Trump to temporarily wait on implementing the Israeli leader's pledge to annex part of the occupied West Bank. Netanyahu declared, "It's an incomparably exciting moment, a historic moment for peace in the Middle East." On the other hand, you knew there had to be this coming, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, whose officials seemed to be taken by surprise, issued an unusually strong condemnation of a regional Arab neighbor and instructed the Palestinian ambassador to the UAE to return immediately. Abbas's spokesperson, Nabil Abu Rudineh, said the Palestinian leadership rejects and denounces the UAE, Israeli, and U.S. trilateral surprising announcement. The statement urged the Arab League and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to reject the deal, adding that neither the UAE nor any other party has the right to speak in the name of the Palestinian people. Now, the deal does provide a diplomatic achievement for Netanyahu after weeks of domestic criticism of his handling of, yes, the pandemic, and as well as the Israeli economy, but also angered right-wing Israeli settlers who wanted and still want badly to annex the West Bank. Netanyahu said that while he had promised to apply Israeli sovereignty to certain areas, including Jewish settlements in the territory, which Palestinians seek for a future state, he had made clear he first needed a green light from Washington, which is apparently not forthcoming. "He deceived us," said David Elayani, who heads the Yesha Council of Settlers. "He has deceived 500,000 residents of the area and hundreds of thousands of voters." Abbas, who heads the Palestinian Authority and the umbrella Palestinian Liberation Organization, PLO, has refused all political dealings with the U.S. for more than 2 years, accusing the White House of taking a consistently pro-Israel stance. Hanan Ashrari, a veteran Palestinian negotiator, said, "We were blindsided. Their secret dealings are now completely out in the open. It's a complete sellout." For Israel and the White House, the deal signified a welcome rapprochement with a key Gulf player in a region from which Israel has long been isolated, aside from two peace treaties with its immediate neighbors, Egypt and Jordan. But for many Palestinians and Arabs in other countries, the word normalization has overwhelming negative connotations. In Gaza, a spokesperson for Hamas said, "Normalization is a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause, and it serves only the Israeli occupation." What's next? Well, the President, Trump, said he'll host Netanyahu and the UAE's Mohammed bin Salman, at the White House for a signing ceremony in a couple of weeks. Very interesting development. It makes me wonder if we're going to start seeing some surprise attacks in response to the deal, similar to what happened decades ago after, who was it? Was it Anwar Sadat and was it Menachem Begin or Yitzhak Rabin signed the historic Middle East peace treaty? In any event, from Israel to New York. Just briefly here, a top U.S. egg producer raised prices at the start of the pandemic, charging as much as 4 times more and hitting low-income families. That's according to a lawsuit, a new one filed by New York Attorney General Letitia James. Hillendale Farms. You know them well in my part of the country. It's one of the top five American egg producers, allegedly hiked prices on more than 4 million cartons sold to major grocery stores in the U.S., as well as to the military and wholesale distributors. The company pocketed an estimated $4 million extra by unlawfully increasing prices, according to the lawsuit. Now, of course, Hillendale unequivocally denies the allegations, the company said in a statement. And let's see, as we're coming up to the end of the program, the U.S. has seized four tankers carrying Iranian oil bound for Venezuela in violations of the sanctions. That's according to the Justice Department. The four tankers were carrying over 1 million barrels of oil, which is now in U.S. custody after help from, quote, foreign partners, according to the Justice Department's statement. These actions represent the government's largest ever seizure of fuel shipments from Iran, according to the statement, which said the shipment was undertaken by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Four ships are reportedly being directed toward Houston in the coming days. Hey, just a quick reminder that tomorrow is the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II, then known as Victory Over Japan Day, VJ Day for short. Please remember those fallen soldiers and the families of those who both lost their lives and who survived the war, and all of our veterans and their families who have served the cause of freedom over the years. That's it for today's program. I've enjoyed being with you. I appreciate you tuning in. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye, everybody.